Hello and welcome to The Tips, a betting preview podcast from the DP World Tour. This week, we look ahead to the Made in Himmerland in Denmark, and on the PGA Tour, it's the John Deere Classic at TPC Deer Run. Once again, this week, we'll be guided through these events by our expert guests who will be diving into the facts and figures to provide some insight into where the value may lie. Before we start, it is important to note that this podcast is aimed at listeners aged 18 and over. All odds were accurate at the time of recording, and the betting information is aimed at a UK audience only. Please remember to gamble responsibly, and for more information, visit begambleaware.org. You may have thought it would be hard to top getting Sir Nick Faldo on last week, but this time we have freelance golf writer Lord Matt Cooper, as well as writer for Odds Checker, Viscount Niall Lyons. Welcome, gentlemen. Matt, coming to you first. I believe you were on site at the Betfred British Masters last week, which was great for the podcast. Dave Tindall coming home with Callum Hill each way and Alex Bjork as well. What did you enjoy about the course and the challenge at the Belfry? And were you surprised at all by the winner, Daniel Hillier, who finished the round absolutely superbly on Sunday to snatch a win?
Yeah, the Belfry's become like a really special place for British and European golf. And it's obvious the fact that the Ryder Cup renaissance happened there. It's become like a real field of dreams. I think what no one quite expected on Sunday was that it'd be like a Kiwi field of dreams. But that's exactly what happened. I mean, it's an astonishing final round. Six guys going into the final round in the lead. And then incredibly, kind of none of them featured that much in the conclusion. First of all, we have this great story of Gunnar Wiebe, the American who won a tour card and whose career as a tour golfer appeared finished a few years ago after he had a bizarre accident when he walked into a glass window and ruptured his tendon and all sorts of terrible things. He's won himself a spot in the Open, and for a brief period looked like he'd set a target no one was going to beat, nearly 3 hours ahead of the rest of the field, of the leaders. But then Daniel Hillier was brilliant. An eagle, birdie, eagle stretch that just sort of vaulted him clear of the field. Really impressive golfer. It was a third top five in a handful of finishes, and he looks pretty impressive. I bumped into his agent at the Amateur Championship about 6 weeks ago, and he was really confident that this guy's very, very good. And I think since then he's kind of proved it. I was given a pretty hefty nudge basically there, and I really should have done something about it. Unfortunately, I didn't. But as you were saying, he hit a huge figure, about 170 on Betfair, prior to going eagle, birdie, eagle, and it was a spectacular finish. That course does have, that's the other fantastic thing about the Belfry, two par fives where you can make big gains, and then an 18th that can cause carnage, and it delivered again. And a special place, and Justin Rose didn't do quite as well as his backers would have hoped, but he put on a good performance. The crowds were pretty impressive yet again. So Nick Faldo added a bit of luster. I think it was a really, really good week.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a fantastic week and a great vision of seeing Minwoo Lee and David Michelozzi watching him win. There's been a lot of noise about Daniel Hillier for a while, and he's filling that Kiwi void we've got from no Ryan Fox at the moment. So a very impressive win there. And then if we go over the pond, Dave Tindall continued his form with each way win with Taylor Moore, who looked like he might get it done for a while. Niall, what did you make of the Rocket Mortgage Classic and the epic finish that was a lip out from Colin Morikawa to get to the big 25 under and then losing a playoff to the return of Ricky Fowler, and obviously Adam Hadwin in there as well.
Yeah, I backed Colin Morikawa myself. So yeah, the lip out, it was such a tremendous round of golf on Sunday, and then the lip out on the 72nd was hard to take. But so I was probably the only one who wasn't doing handstands for Ricky Fowler at the end, but my goodness, it was great to see, wasn't it? I don't think there's anybody in the game who would begrudge Fowler's win now after what he's gone through in the last couple of years. And it's been on the cards. He's just playing unbelievable golf all season. So yeah, it was just, I think maybe the US Open a few weeks ago, leading almost from start to finish, you know, the final round was just a bit too far for him. The putter didn't quite hold up on that day. And he actually missed a few putts down the stretch last week as well in Detroit, but it came together in the end. Two horrible drives off the 18th in regulation and then in the playoff too. So it's a miracle that he got the job done in the end. But yeah, fantastic to see.
Yeah, he is a very popular winner on tour from fans and players. And I've seen he's as low as 25, 28 to 1 in some places for the Open. Obviously has a pretty good record on Lynx Golf over the years. And we're heading into a very exciting period in DP World Tour schedule with the Scottish Open and then the 151st Open fast approaching. But first, let's take a look at one of the most popular events on tour amongst both players and fans. It's the Made in Himmerland from Farsø, Denmark. The players return to Himmerland Golf Spa and Resort for the seventh time this week, a course that the players seem to enjoy and, of course, home to the rather cute but endlessly entertaining 16th hole, where the players walk through a hospitality tent to reach the tee. The course is a par 70 and can stretch up to 7,400 yards. However, we've seen in the past the setup can be much shorter than that, as short as 6,650 yards, which has led to some low scoring over the years. And the last two editions have been won at 21 under par, with Oliver Wilson defending his title this year after an incredibly emotional victory last time out. It was his first win on tour for over 8 years. So, Niall, talk us through this golf course, if you wouldn't mind. As I said, we've been here a fair few times now. There's loads of different tee boxes, which makes it a little bit more complicated when picking who you want to feature. And the organisers seem very fluid and flexible with how they set it up. So must be quite hard sort of profiling players when I'm putting this together.
Yeah, it's not easy. You don't often have courses that play around the 6,700-yard mark. It's actually a par 70 this year. I think it's been a par 71 before, previously, for this event. But it's worth noting they've got plenty of tees. They've got plenty of tees to make this anything from 6,700 yards to 7,000 yards plus. So they can tinker with the distance of the holes, but there definitely isn't any huge weight given towards distance off the tee here. What you do there won't determine the week, but it's mostly approach play that stands out and the short game. They've got small greens around here, so there will be plenty of greens missed across the week. There's often wind that materializes. I think that's going to be the worst on Thursday and Friday before minimizing over the weekend. There's not much wind then, but hitting greens in regulation will be an important thing, especially over the first couple of days, and then scrambling as well, just with an inevitable greens missed. We've got bent grass greens here as well, which is also taken into consideration. Often plays quite fast as well. One course to maybe look to is Diamond CC in Austria. Mark Warren and Bernd Wiesberger have both won here at Himmerland and Diamond CC, so a nod to form in the Austrian Open is definitely, it could prove fruitful across the week. So yeah, it's certainly a cute course, as you say. Cron sur Cher is another one, a very short track that obviously plays at altitude. Looking at previous results there, could point you in the right direction as well.
I saw Matt get very excited with hearing Cron, the altitude, the thin air, Thriston Lawrence potentially getting a mention and feature. We heard about the weather there from Niall, and I read, Matt, it can be a little bit described as a bit of a putting contest if the weather doesn't come into fruition. How much do you pay attention in your previews when picking players at the forecast, and how reliable is it always in these sort of scenarios?
Yeah, I think it depends where you're thinking of, but certainly at certain courses, it's going to be important to have the weather and a good weather forecast behind you. Like Niall says, earlier on, it looks like it could be a bit breezy. And I think what also adds to that at this course is it's quite exposed, but it's also quite a strange plot of land. So quite a lot of the holes sort of sit quite uncomfortably. It's certainly not the sort of plot of land that, you know, the guys who created the great courses of the sort of early 19th and 20th century would have recognized as a classic golf plot of land. So in that case, it kind of reminds me of the closing holes at Celtic Manor. Not that there's any great comparison between people who play well at Celtic Manor and here, but certainly visually, you're hitting sort of odd shots across the side of hills. So there's definitely something going on there. And I think when Niall mentions Cron, Cron's also very similar. It's again, it's on a hilly piece of land. Odd shots have to be played. So it's somebody who can actually cope with that, the fact that they might be at a weird angle when they're trying to hit, or they're hitting odd shaped angles with their shots.
Okay, yeah, and you mentioned the exciting sort of finish there at the other courses, and we always seem to get that here with a very tricky 18th, which can really separate the field. And it's been really exciting through the years. What do you think it is, Niall? And they've tried different formats and tournaments. This one's really stuck. What is it, do you think, that's made it so popular and so successful over the years?
I think, as you say, you mentioned it in your introduction there, Ollie, it's a cute golf course, you know what I mean? It's certainly different. I know we all love watching Crown Sur-Sur, the different elements that brings. It's just not the same type of golf that we see. What we watched last week at the Belfry, there's plenty of three woods off the tee and long irons and the par fours, and it's just a totally different type of golf. And as we'll see on the 16th hole, which you know can only measure 70-80 yards at some times across the week, there'll be probably numerous holes in one. We were talking just off air, that's 1-6 for a hole in one this week. Never really do you see such short odds for holes in one. So yeah, as we're saying, it's an exciting event. We've seen proposals and everything on that hole. So it's certainly a different event and one that's exciting for the fans to attend.
Yeah, so I didn't see any prices for a proposal this week, but the hole in one at 1-6, yeah, wouldn't go down as a great value, I would say. And the field is impressive again. We've got, if we're looking at the top of the market before we look into your tips, it's Nicolai Højgaard and Torbjørn Olesen around 18-1 and Thomas Bjørk. Then we've got Jordan Smith at 20s, and then Rasmus Højgaard, Yannick Paul, Adrian Ategi, and Bob McIntyre all around 22-25-1 with Nicholas Norgard Muller. I think he may have even dropped Muller now, just behind that. He obviously came close last week. Looked like he may have got the job done on the front nine. So that's the top of the market. Let's find out who you guys are going with, starting with you, Matt. Who's your opening pick for outright this week?
Yeah, I'm going with a guy who was quite impressive last week. I came very close to backing him last week, actually, and after a few holes, I was breathing a sigh of relief. It's the Scotsman Ewan Ferguson, who started par, double bogey, bogey, bogey. It's before overthrew four holes at the Belfry. But I got it wrong in thinking that he was a busted flush for the week, because he promptly carded a 69 on Thursday. So a really, really strong bounce back on the front nine at Belfry, his second nine. Then played the next two rounds in level par, and then he came home in 68 on Sunday. And when he was chatting to the Scotsman's golf writer, Martin Dempster, he was really chipper about his entire week, proud of the fact that he'd fought back from that shoddy start. Also really excited that he'd really gone for it on Sunday and he'd really enjoyed himself. Was really particularly chipper about the fact that he'd stood on the 18th tee at 8-under, thinking that he needed to post 9-under to give himself a chance of a win. Was really, really proud of the fact that he hit an absolutely gun tee shot. Left himself about 30 feet for the birdie. Remembered Torbjørn Olesen holding one like that last year. Gave himself the chance. Actually missed the putt coming back to slip back to 6-7-under. But was very confident about the fact that he felt like he was doing everything he needed to do at the end. That's a fourth top 10 of the year for him. He won twice last year. He's a player I really, really like a lot. And I was actually on him last year at the Maiden Himmerland when he finished second, and he was in the top four all week. Really looked like he liked the course. And I don't know, he's one of those players who I think I kind of like, and I'm always like a little bit surprised he's not in the same bracket as those players you've just mentioned. I mean, there'd be a few people in Scotland, actually, who'd always like say that Bob McIntyre attracts all the attention, but actually Ewan Ferguson has actually got the better record over at least the last 2 years. I think the fact that Bob McIntyre's done stuff in the majors puts him in a slightly higher bracket, but in terms of wins, Ferguson's ahead of him, and yet he always seems to be just beyond. And I'm always happy if you've got a fella who you think has got more potential, but the bookmakers prefer to just look a little bit aside. I'm always happy, and yeah, I tend to always like feel if Ewan Ferguson, if there's reasons why he likes a place and he's over about 28, so I'm always pretty keen, and that's the case this week.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. He is absolutely, he's going to get 33-1 for six places. So that's a point each way from you there. And I agree. I love his swagger. The commentator was saying he looks like he's got a lot of confidence, which you need. And he'll have it after 63 he opened with last year at this course. So knows it well, obviously. So that's Ewan Ferguson first out of the gates. Niall, who are you opening up with?
Yeah, I'm going for Jordan Smith. I'm quite surprised that we're getting the price about him around 20-1 this week. He started around 20-1 last week in the Betfred British Masters as well, and was backed quite early on. And towards the start of the event, he was more of a 16-1 shot. And now we're getting bigger this week with Justin Rose, Minwoo Lee, and Adrian Maronk now sitting it out. Now we have got the Højgaard brothers, but Rasmus pulled out a couple of weeks ago and has got injury concerns. And you would certainly think that Nicolai would be better suited to a strong driver's course, which we don't really get here. So with Jordan Smith's ball striking, which is so impressive, and we know that for a long time, I'm just very surprised, more or less. This bet's more about the price than anything. I can't believe that we're getting bigger than him than last week with those guys pulling out. He was fourth on approach at the European Open 3 or 4 weeks ago, and then third on approach at the US Open, which is absolutely incredible in that field. Finished sixth in Germany and then 20th at LA Country Club, which is a fair effort for Jordan Smith. He was third here in 2021, and this is surprisingly only his 13th DP World Tour event of the year. He's quite lightly raced, and he's one that I've got in mind who I think he can have a very strong end of the season simply because he hasn't played that many tournaments across the year. But as I say, it's simply the price on this one, and I'm just so surprised that he's drifted from the 16-1 mark out to 20-1 here, especially Justin Rose, Minwoo Lee playing so well on the PGA Tour lately, and Adrian Maronka lighting things up on this tour as well. So yeah, I'm quite excited about the price about Smith.
There you go. I think even on the exchange, that was 2 points each way from you, but on the exchange, you may be able to get a bit more. He is 20-1 for 7 places, and a greens and red machine leads the tour in that with his very accurate driver. And if the putter's hot, you can go very well. We saw in Germany, as you said, this top six. That final round, just nothing dropped at all. So hopefully that does. And I think we all remember he likes a low one, and it was 30 under he had in Portugal for that win not that long ago. So let's go on to the second and final selections for this event, please, starting with you, Matt.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the Spaniard, Pablo Larrazabal. He's another player who I kind of like in this sort of level of competition. And I think he's kind of proved it over the last 2 years. He won twice at the start of last season in a very hot run of form. He's won twice again this season. And I think you can almost slot the back end of last year and almost separate it, because he got himself in quite a pickle. He went and played the other tour, didn't actually, only played there once, came back, didn't like it, got into all sorts of difficulties trying to assess where he felt he should be playing and what was going on. But basically, when his head has been in a good position in the last 2 years, he's been a win machine. He's won four times in those 30 starts, which in itself is pretty impressive. But the fact that his head was in a terrible place for about 15 of those is just gobsmacking. Two of his wins have come in his last five starts, and two of those other starts were majors. And I think you can kind of draw a line through Pablo's name when it comes to the majors. This is the sort of golf course, and this is the sort of field that he's just dynamite up against at the moment. The course form is really fantastic. In 19, he was fourth. He was 19th in 2021 when he was the first round leader. He did miss the cut last year, but that came in that spell that I've just talked about when his head wasn't in a good position. I think he's a really, really fine player, and he's also very, very good when it gets blustery. He proved that actually when he won in Korea this year, and he's proved it in Doha as well quite a lot. Fine player. And a little quirky little fact, I don't know this for certain, but I know that one player of about his level chose not to play at the Belfry last week because he's a bit sniffy about British cuisine. I am fairly confident that it was Pablo Larrazabal, and I'm hoping that pastries rather than pasties is going to be the thing that separates the distance. That if that is what it takes for Pablo to succeed, that's it. So there's your line, Ollie. Pablo's going for pastries, not pasties.
Love it. The Pablo paradox is out. There we go. We were only on him. It's okay. Okay. We're going to have to follow that trend throughout his finishes. But absolutely right. And he loves the wind. You talk about quirky course. He loves it when it gets tricky and a bit odd and different types of shots. And he certainly is a putting wizard. So if it comes down to a putting comp, his numbers are phenomenal. So Pablo, 45-1 and six places still in offer, so it's a point each way there for the Spaniard. And Niall, who is your second and final outright pick before we move on to the specials?
Yeah, I'm going for Matthew Jordan. He's someone who's excelling with the short game lately, and we've seen here how important putting is down the years. Oliver Wilson won last year. He ranked third on the greens. Fiesberger ranked seventh and first on the greens when he won. Before that, Thomas Peters was second. Mark Warren was third on the greens. It's really important to putt well around here, and Matthew Jordan's doing that well lately. He ranked 19th in strokes gained putting last week at the Belfry. And previous to that, there he was 9th in Sweden, 22nd in Germany, 16th at the KLM. All those performances were down to a short game. Now, his irons will need to improve, I think, if we want him to win this week. But there's reason to suggest that that can happen around Himmerland. There's a links feel to the course, obviously, with the wind, but the topography of it too it's quite linksy as well. So he's got great credentials in that department. He's got a top five in the Dunhill links. Of course, in his amateur career, he won the St Andrews Links and he won the Lytham Trophy as well. He was fourth here last year, shot a third round of 62, which equaled the low round of the week. And he has a fourth place at Cron Sur Sierre as well. So everything's pointing towards a big performance for Matthew Jordan this week. And yeah, as I say, his short game's just in that good of a shape in recent weeks that I think if he just has one decent week with the irons, we could be looking at a victory.
There you go. Yeah, looking at his stats on the DP World Tour website, it's pretty impressive. He is like top 80. 80 is the worst for anything. So if any of those things kick off for one week, that's fantastic. You normally see someone will be three figures for putting or driving distance or something, but he's very, very impressive indeed. And he opened up bigger, but he's actually 55-1 currently for six places. And that was a point each way from Niall. And Matt, you've got a special bet for us in the top 20 market, I believe.
I have, just before I crack on with that, Niall's pick of Matthew Jordan, it's quite worth just adding for a matter of information for everybody that it's open final qualifying today. And Matthew Jordan is at that, I think he's at West Lancs. And if he gets through that, he'll be playing at Royal Liverpool, which obviously for all golfers, teeing up at the Open is exciting. But he's actually a member at Royal Liverpool. It's where he learned the game. So if he gets through today, there'll be a big boost of confidence there and he'll be arriving in Denmark feeling very, very chipper about his game. It's worth keeping your eye out on the four fields there just to see who might be arriving with a big boost of confidence. Matthew Southgate, he's down at Royal Porthcawl, I think, and he was very close last year, so he's another one to keep an eye on. Cracking on with my specialist bet, I'm going with Alex Bjork, who's in a great run of form, but I'm probably not too keen backing him at around 20-1, just because he just doesn't seem to win as often as he should. But you want him on side doing what he really, really does well, and he really, really knocks out the top 20s. And I think given his price in the outright, the fact that you can get 11-8 for a top 20 is pretty, pretty good. In this quality field this year, he's got a top 20 eight times in 11 starts. He's got 9 in 13 in all events, and he's had 2 in 4 starts at Himmerland, with another one pretty good as well. So, I just think you've got actually 2 in 3 starts. Sorry, at Himmerland. I think we've got loads in favour there. Alex Bjork, his long game is good enough at the moment that he keeps putting himself on the greens, and he's a very good putter. So he's a nice fit for Himmerland, and he's in great form. And we've got relatively lack of stress in the fact that we're going for top 20 when he's been pulling them out left, right, and centre.
As you say, the lack of stress is a real appeal. I feel like his name comes up every week. He clocked another top 10 last week. So he's 11-8. That was 3 points from Matt. So clearly a fan of Bjork for the top 20 market. Okay, that summarizes that. And now it's time for a quick game of Who Am I? Okay, everyone's favorite. You've had your picks. Now it's my moment to hopefully shine and find the winner from the Made in Himmerland. How it works is I will give a few clues. You can jump in, hand up whenever, and try get the winner. Last week, I don't believe anyone got it off the top of my head. So let's see if you two can do a bit better. And I've tried to not make it too obscure because that would be very unfair for Niall, because Matt would obviously know what size their feet are and anything else. So we're going to open up with, I won 21 times as an amateur before going pro in 2015. Very prolific. And when he came on tour, that was what was reeled out. Any guesses, or should we go to number two? Okay, we're going to number two.
Yeah.
I'm the first person from my country to top the Asian Tour Order of Merit. Niall Lyons, just ahead of Matt Cooper.
Is it Rikuyo Hoshino?
It is not.
Can I have a little guess?
Absolutely.
I'll go, is it Jazz Jane Watanond?
It is not. Number three. I was picked for the 2016 Olympics and the 2018 Eurasia Cup. Some great facial expressions. I would love this for her. Cogs are turning. Niles back in.
Hisatsune?
It's not Hisatsune.
Oh.
Matt Cooper.
Gavin Green?
Ding, ding, ding. Gavin Green. Yeah, absolutely. I'm not sure if the last two clues would have helped. So well done they were. As well as the country I represented, I am of Portuguese, Irish and Chinese descent, Gavin Green. And the fifth one, my initials are the same letter, which was the real giveaway. Well done, Matt Cooper. Very impressive and good guesses from both. So I hope you enjoyed the game. All the listeners, if you don't want to bet, then we have another game for you. It's the fancy game on the DP World Tour website. You select six players each week and compete against your friends and others for the bragging right. So good luck with that and sign up on the DP World Tour website. Over on the PGA Tour this week, we head to TPC Deer Run in Illinois for the John Deere Classic. JT Poston secured his maiden PGA Tour victory in style here last year, winning wire to wire with a score of 21 under par. First time in 30 years that's been done at this event, the wire to wire win. Much like last week at the Rocket Mortgage, scoring has historically been very low here at TPC Deer Run, with winners usually in the 20s under par. And Michael Kim even shot 27 under in 2018. Matt, let's come to you first. The fairways here are some of the widest on the PGA Tour schedule, averaging over 40 yards wide. What does that mean in terms of the type of player who could do very well here? And is it the case that some of the more erratic drivers of the ball can still keep it in the fairways and be in great positions?
Well, it's been a bit of a strange one over the last sort of 20 years, this course. There was a time when Steve Tricker wandered up, won it left, right and centre. Zach Johnson had amazing finishes and just kept reeling them off. And then more recently, it's sort of become a bit of an outsider's course. Like you were saying, like JT Poston and Michael Kim was a recent winner. I think even Bryson DeChambeau was quite a big price when he won it. It's also been a strange one because traditionally it used to be the week before the Open. And a lot of people would sort of look at it and sniff and think, well, it's not a very good place to go and play the week before the Open. And yet Jordan Spieth did very well there before he won the Open. Francesco Molinari, I think he was second before he won the Open. I suspect if there's any reason why that might be, it's just a boost of confidence that you've played well. But also because those fairways are quite wide, it demands very good approach play and very good short game on the whole. And those tend to be deciding factors at the Open. Whether it will remain that way now that the PGA Tour has the Scottish Open on its schedule, so it's now 2 weeks before, I don't know. But it's always been a sort of quirky track, and the undulations are a big thing, I always think, here. Players who play, to some extent, the Masters, because Augusta National is so undulating, Innisbrook is another golf course where there's a lot of elevation changes. Those tend to be quite good pointers to this week. And it's always been players who play elevation changes and sweeping golf courses tend to be the ones that I look at ahead of this week.
Okay, great. Yeah, as you said, there have been some big odds looking through the history, but yeah. The last 10 years, apart from the two Jordan Spieths, he was favourite once and fourth favourite, the average odds is about 90 to 100 to 1. Bryson was 55 looking there, with Michael Kim, as mentioned, was 200. A couple of courses you've mentioned there. Now, this event has had some seriously memorable moments. The Steve Stricker 3 in a row, Jordan Spieth hurling from the bunker for his first tour win, I think it was, and Johnny Morgan dramatically losing in a playoff. What do you really like about this event, and what are you looking for an angle in from your side with this preview?
I think it comes in the race stage in the calendar that after TPC River Highlands and Detroit that, you know, we've got three birdie fests on the trot. So I think anybody who hasn't scored well in the last couple of weeks who have played, you know, you can almost rule them out because there's no real excuses not to have scored well these last couple of weeks. It's also an interesting course simply because there's not many courses that are heavily wedge dominated on the PGA Tour, and this is one of them. Anything from 50 to 125 yards this week, the guys who excel in that department usually play well here. Sedgefield is a course that I look to. That's another course that holds the Wyndham Championship, which often throws up similar players playing well in both, another heavily wedge-dominated course as well. So, yeah, it's a birdie fest, and there'll be flirtation with 59s, I'm sure, across the week as well. So, yeah, it's one of those weeks just to look to the last couple of weeks and a couple of correlating course forms. So, yeah, we'll do our best to find a winner.
Absolutely, yeah. Has had that illustrious history. I mean, even Paul Goydos, wasn't it, 59 in 2010, and he didn't even manage to win somehow, which feels almost unfair. Have either of you had any good history in this event? Any winners through the years? Did you pick any of these big odds?
I can't remember one, but I do remember one of my fondest stories from an Open was myself and Dave Tindall at Muirfield. Is that 10, 11 years ago? We rocked up there early on in the week, and we were sat in a cafe, and some young lads sat in the cafe next to us, and it was Jordan Spieth, and just quietly having a little drink, celebrating that he just got to the Open off the back of the John Deere. And it was one of those strange things where you kind of knew this guy was good, but at that moment he looked like any sort of 20-year-old kid. And you almost had to sort of punch yourself to realise that this was a fella who's going to play at the Open later that week, and pretty much you thought were going to be a bit of a superstar. That's a very stretched fond memory of the John Deere.
Sadly, John Speed's not playing this week, but if we look at the top of the market, there actually are 9 of the world's top 50 in the field, which is the most in this event since 2012, and it's a fascinating top of the market with Denny McCarthy leading, who's never won, 16-1. Russell Henley also 16-1, but as low as 12s. Cameron Young, who obviously highest ranked golfer, but in struggling for form, you can get 20-1. The amateur, Swede, everyone's talking about Ludvig Åberg, who people are even tipping for Ryder Cup selection, is the fourth favourite at 25-1. And then you've got Adam Hadwin, who obviously lost the playoff last week, at 28-1. So that's the top of the market. Niall, let's come to you first to see if any of them feature or who does in your selections this week.
Yeah, Ludvig Åberg is obviously an exciting prospect. It's interesting to see what will happen over the next couple of months in terms of that. Plenty of people getting carried away early doors, I would say, but nevertheless, he's certainly an exciting prospect. Well, my top selection goes to Nick Taylor. The Canadians are having a great year, obviously. Nick Taylor especially, winning his home open just a couple of weeks ago. A lot of my picks this week are based around price, even though there's some negative evidence to go with them. But nevertheless, I think there are a few overpriced golfers this week who just must be backed, and Nick Taylor's one of them. He's a wizard with a wedge. Anything from 50 to 150 yards, Nick Taylor's excellent. And I was taken by his performance earlier on in the year at Phoenix, the way he just stood alongside Scheffler the whole week and pushed him the whole way. But I kicked myself that I missed out on his victory in Canada, maybe just thinking that it was almost just a bridge too far, that no Canadian had won that, you know, in a lifetime. So I was a bit annoyed with myself that I missed out, but I think there's every chance that he can go and win again. And I'm surprised that he's more than double the price of the likes of Denny McCarthy and Russell Henley. And of course, Denny McCarthy would swap for Nick Taylor's season in a heartbeat. So I simply think he's overpriced. There are negatives there. He obviously missed a cut at the US Open the following week, but you know, with the hangover from winning his home open, we can maybe put down to that, as well as he doesn't hit the ball that far off the tee, so he was always going to be up against it at LA Country Club. He's only once broke the top 30 here in 7 appearances and 4 missed cuts. But you look back to JT Poston, his best previous to his victory was 64th. Michael Kim's best was 47th, and he's since had a couple of missed cuts after his victory as well. So course form certainly isn't a prerequisite to picking the winner here. So yeah, I'm just quite excited about the price. Double the price of those guys just doesn't really make sense to me, given the year that he's had. You know, he almost beat Scottie Scheffler in Phoenix, winning his home open. He was second in the Zurich Classic as well, the team event. He's had a great season, some great results, great ball striking, an absolute wizard with a putter this year as well. So yeah, I'm quite excited about his chances of going, getting 2 victories in a space of 3 appearances.
Yeah, he's 40-1. 8 places still available and 2 points each way you've given there. And he certainly is. If it is a putting contest like Denmark, it could be. We know how good he is with it. Tommy Fleetwood certainly knows how good he is with the 72-footer, obviously, there in the playoff. And he's a different player potentially now. He's got the win under the belt, and very interesting to hear. Yeah, course form isn't great, but recent form going into it, and JT Poston had a runner-up the week before he won last year. So another sort of feather in the cap there. Okay, let's move on to Matt. Who are you opening up with for the John Deere?
Yeah, there's a bit of a link between my my first pick and Niles, in that it's another golfer who is impressive when not winning. It's Adam Schenk, and he was second at Innisbrook when he competed all the way down the line, trying to win there. And I thought he was very, very impressive, even when he knocked his tee shot into the trees, but was very, very unfortunate to get an absolutely shocking lie there. He was also second in Colonial a few weeks ago, and a lot of golfers have done the double of winning at Colonial and also winning here at Deer Run. So that's a big tick. Seventh at Muirfield Village, and then last week he was in the top 10 again. I think it's a really, really good CV for the year for Schenk. And then you look at his course form, very simple this one. Sixth in 2019 and fourth in 2021. So I think he's shown good form. His good form this year has been at good places for this particular test, and he's kind of proved himself on this test as well. So it almost feels a little bit simple that it's, and when he opened up at 33s, I thought that was more than fair. So yeah, a very easy, straightforward first pick this one.
Nice. Yeah, sometimes when it almost feels too obvious, it could be one of those, and you're like, why am I avoiding this? He's actually 30s now, but still six places and a point each way for the man who loves birdies. That's one thing for sort of thing to mention. He's 11th on tour for like total birdies and everything. So clearly enjoys making those. Okay, over to Niall for your second and final outright pick in this event.
Yeah, there's a common theme with my picks this week in that the price dictates the bet. And it's Cameron Young. There'll be plenty looking to avoid him this week, but I don't think that he's quite in such bad form as what some people make out. He's obviously still to get the victory, which, you know, will be a big monkey off his back when he eventually does. But he's got two missed cuts in the last 12 months, so he's not in that bad form. Obviously, two of those missed cuts have come in the last five or six appearances. But he was seventh at the Masters just back in April. And ever since, he's been plagued with short game problems, in particular the putter. His ball striking has been fine, maybe not at his best from when he was performing around 12 months ago. But nevertheless, his putter improved just a couple of weeks ago to finish 32nd at the US Open at LA Country Club. But as I say, it is the price here this week. It's a weak field. He went off a very well-fancied 33-1 shot in the Masters in April, where he finished 7th, of course. And McCarthy and Henley, who are both shorter than him this week, ranged from 100 to 150-1 at Augusta that week, whilst Cameron Young was 33s. And now we see it flipped, that Cameron Young is bigger. And I just don't buy that he should be. I think he's playing almost similar golf to the likes of Justin Thomas at the minute. They've obviously got their problems. But I think if Justin Thomas was in this field, I reckon he'd be about a 12-1 shot max, even given how he's playing. McCarthy is winless on tour, and Russell Henley has one win in 6 years. Although that, you know, they're playing absolutely tremendous golf lately, and they've got great credentials on a course like this. But look to Cameron Young, who's finished second, third, and seventh in three of his last six major championships, and obviously hasn't got the win yet. But I think the 20-1 is just—you just have to back it, considering the two guys that are in front of him in the market.
Yeah, great. Yeah, 20-1 is still there for six places for Cam Young. And that's one and a half points each way from you. As you said, the putting has been weak and the stats aren't great, but has a good one. You never know. And again, he's top 10 for birdie average, which is very impressive. Those odds probably reflect the fact he's not played here and the bookies are a little bit scared. And we saw in 2019, I think it was, with Fratelli and it getting his win, and it didn't put him off at all. So maybe he can draw some stuff from that. Lovely. So yeah, 20-1 there for Cam. And finally, before we do a specials, can we get your second pick, Matt?
Yeah, I'm going with Ches Reavie, or Shay Reavie, as I like to think of him, the sort of like least romantic sounding French bistro in history. As ridiculous as that sounds, he is the sort of person who I think his look is not particularly cool. He's a 41-year-old journeyman golfer, plods along, and it's very easy to sort of underrate him. But he won in a field of this sort of quality this time last year, the Barracuda Championship. He's made 9 of his last 10 cuts. He was 4th at River Highlands. He had a 65 at the Canadian Open, a 65 in round 3 last week. He's a 3-time winner on tour. I think that in itself sort of would have me putting him the sort of low side of 50-1, especially when you look at his deer run record, which isn't fantastic, but he was 5th in 2011. He was 18th in 2021, just 2 years ago, when he was in the top 3 for the first 36 holes. I think this is well within his scope. It's the sort of track that and test and field that he might win up against. And yeah, he opened at 80s. I think you can get him at 66s at the moment. I think that's the wrong side of 50s.
Yeah, there you go. That was for a point each way in his 66s and for 8 places. They're still available. And we have seen when he likes a course and when he's hot, he's very hot. And as you say, just a standard looking 41-year-old with, I think I saw it was $21.4 million in the bank. So a pretty good career nonetheless. Okay, beautiful. So that's all of the outright picks in that event in the John Deere Classic. But Niall, you've got a specials again in the top 20 market for us.
Yeah, I quite like this one with Tyler Duncan. He bounced back to some form last week after 5 missed cuts on the trot on the PGA Tour. He shot 70, 68, 66 across the opening 3 days. He shot a 74 on the final day of the Rocket Mortgage, which wasn't great. But nevertheless, the putter has been a real problem with him all season. The last time he posted positive strokes gain numbers with the putter was at the Honda Classic back in February, where he finished 3rd. So you can see when he puts well, just how well he can play. He finished 3rd in Punta Cana as well. We don't have the stats for that week, but I think we can safely assume that he putted well that week as well. The key thing is here, he's got 6 weeks on the trot throughout all those missed cuts of the putter improving each week. So 6 weeks in a row, he has improved on the greens. Last week was in particular a great ball striking performance. He was 19th on approach, which is his best 4 days with the iron since the Baron Nelson 14 months ago. He was 32nd off the tee, which is his best effort off the tee since Sawgrass in March. He's won the RSM Classic, holding off Webb Simpson as well, another course which holds some similar characteristics to this one. So yeah, just the turnaround in ball striking last week is noteworthy, as well as the improvement in putting for 6 weeks in the trot. And whilst he's 150-1 plus in the outright, I think he could go well. It might just be a step too far to think he's going to turn that into a victory straight away, but it's a sign of things just turning around for him. And I think there's 6-1 out there for a top 20 finish, which I think is the right way to play him this week.
Yep, spot on. 6-1 for top 20. And that was a point given by you there, Niall. So that ends a very comprehensive show so far with plenty of names in those previews. So it's time to just recap all of the tips from the guys. Starting with Matt Cooper's tips, and it's the Made in Himmerland first. His opening selection for outright is Ewan Ferguson at 33-1 and 1 point each way, followed by Spaniard Pablo Larrazabal at 45-1, also a point each way. And his special bet is a top 20 for Alex Bjork at 11-8, and that is good for 3 points. Then over at the John Deere Classic, Adam Schenck, 30-1, 1 point each way, and Ches Reavie, 66-1, 1 point each way. For Niall Lyons in the Made in Himmerland, he's gone for Jordan Smith at 20-1, 2 points each way, and Matthew Jordan at 55-1 for 1 point each way. And in the John Deere Classic, it's Nick Taylor at 40-1, 2 points each way, and Cam Young at 20-1 for 1.5 points each way. His special, again, a top 20 bet for Tyler Duncan at 6-1 for 1 point. Thanks again to our guests for what was a brilliant in-depth preview into 2 events this week. You can find them on Twitter at Matt Cooper Golf and at Bet Golf World. So follow them there for more great insights into the world of golf and all of the betting that's going on. As ever, remember to gamble responsibly, and when the fun stops, stop. We will be back next week to see if we've gone better than Dave Tindall and we've picked a winner, and we'll look ahead to the Genesis Scottish Open and Barbasol Championship. Enjoy the golf and see you next time on The Tips.